we get the 5 o'clock hour underway this afternoon by getting on the old telephone line and welcoming in from a defector and the Distraction Podcast, our friend David Roth. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Did you brush before you came on with us?
Why? I can't be putting my business on the street. I mentioned the Distraction Podcast, which I'm promoting right now here on the radio, to my co-host, that I'm often a few minutes late for it, and it's because I somehow developed a habit where I like to brush my teeth right before we record the podcast, even if I'd already brushed them earlier that day. It's kind of a late onset major league relief pitcher brain disease thing. I remember Kirk Wendell used to do something similar when he was with the Mets, and as a kid, I was like, oh, wow, what a colorful thing. Adults are so weird. I know I'll never be like that. And now, for whatever reason, I don't want a podcast unless I have fresh breath.
I brought it up because when I heard that on the podcast, I said, man, I knew there were a number of reasons why I like David so much. I bring a toothbrush with me in my little briefcase when I'm on the road broadcasting football, and have been known to, after partaking of the buffet in a stadium, sneak into the nearest restroom and do a little brush before I go on the air and start talking football.
You've been doing this longer and with more distinction than I have.
Oh, please.
I don't think that you can say that there is any audio benefit to not having a funky mouth when you're talking. Like, you're not, if you're in the booth with you and you just ate a bunch of, chili cheese fries or something, I might ask for you to brush your teeth. But if I'm listening to you or if I'm watching a broadcast of it, I wouldn't know, I don't think.
No, but I feel better.
I decided I didn't believe that.
I just feel better when, the teeth are clean.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what it is. You want to feel, presentable. Even though, for podcasting, it's just I don't think that there is a more intrinsically slovenly pursuit than podcasting. Like, it is, radio, people that have listened, know that you and I are both extremely fit, extremely handsome.
Oh, yes, yes.
Radio can be done by all body types. I feel like podcasting is best done by somebody who's just, lying fully supine on a futon with, a microphone kind of propped up near them. That's the vibe. I don't need to be aiming for an A-plus quality there. I only do that when I'm on the radio because I know it matters more.
Well, I appreciate you always bringing the A-game, regardless of your dental health practices.
Oh, gosh,
when you're here.
I can do no other.
It's not unnoticed. Let me tell you that. We've had several calls from people. Let's see, where to begin?
People demanding to know. That guy's dental hygiene sounds amazing.
Right.
Did
I think
you ask him on the radio about his program?
I bet he has a water pick. I'm noticing something there in his cadence. Goodness. All right, now that we've wandered into the desert of dental health, let me say up front, I love my dentist, but I don't know. I feel like it was about 4 years ago at the dentist, they were asking me, do you floss? Of course, yes, I floss every day. All right, not every day, but I try. And they said, you should really get a water pick. Those are really helpful. And so I did, because I want to be a good patient, and I bought it, and it was fine. But after about 8 months, it became kind of a chore, and I stopped doing it, and they never asked about it again. And I thought, did they know? Did they get a kickback? And is that it? Is that all that was required?
It wouldn't surprise me if there was some sort of internal, intradentist kickback thing going on. Waterpik is one of those technologies. I remember having one as a kid. My parents got one for us. They were very serious about our teeth. And even at the time, I was kind of like, so this is the best we got, huh? This thing? You're just power washing your gums like you would the side of a barn. And it seems like that technology remains, for better or worse, either it's a lot better than it seems, or there's just not a lot of innovation in that space anymore. And they're just kind of like, yeah, the little pokey guy, the thing, use that.
See, I've gone the other way, literally and figuratively. Now I don't use the water pick, but my wife got me a bidet, and that was life changing.
That is so. You're not the first person that has told me this, which is remarkable to me, both because of the fact that, I guess people are comfortable talking to me about what they do in the bathroom, which I think is great. conversation with me, I wanted to feel like a safe place for truth. Also, I feel like there now is decently widespread adoption of that technology. And I remember not only was it not a thing when I was a kid, I remember the first time I was in Europe, there being a bidet in a hotel bathroom and being like, so that's just like the backup toilet because it doesn't look very well designed. I don't know how that's going to possibly work. And the fact that now it's, I would say it's probably 50-50 people. You can just get one bolted on in your home and then live a bathroom wise anyway, like a sort of a decadent Parisian gentleman.
I always think about a friend of mine who had apartment buildings. This was years ago now. He was showing the apartment to a young woman and her mother who were from a slightly more rural area of Maine. And there was a bidet in this one apartment he was showing. And she said to her mother, as she was partaking of it the way you would, if it was what she thought it was, she said, look, a water fountain in the apartment.
That was the other thought, too. It looks like a water fountain, but also humiliatingly formatted. The idea of being like, fresh drinking water on demand, great. Why do I have to drink it out of something that is basically toilet shaped?
Yeah.
And that's where you got it. That's where you got to explain it. Honestly, I was that person. There was no, I was pure Aroostook County in my mindset on that.
That's where the young woman was from. Wow, that was good.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be one of a couple of counties,
yeah, right?
Right. Like, I'm sure it's beautiful up there.
Yes.
My wife's family's been there for as long as anybody has been alive. And I feel like if she's been there once, it was like on the way to somewhere else.
David Roth with us here on Downtown. Let's talk a little NBA Finals. What's your interest level? Celtics, Mavs, and do you think it'll be a good series?
Decently high, given that I am not a huge fan of either team. I am very curious, and I actually wanted to sort of ask you some questions on this, because I feel like I have friends that are Celtics fans. They are all so emotionally volatile relative to the Celtics at this point that, much as I love them, I don't feel like they can be trusted. They're either way too high or way too low. I've watched the Celtics a decent amount this year. I know that they are, by the numbers, historically good. The lineup looks great. I mean, I've seen, all the sort of advanced stat stuff. I watched them a little bit through the playoffs, and it was like they were just playing teams from the ACC. Like, and I know that's not the case. They're a lot better in the Eastern Conference playoffs, had enough chaos in them that they didn't wind up with any really good opponents even through to the finals, I don't think. So the Mavericks I have a lot of opinions on because I watched them and they played a lot of games. And they played a lot of interesting teams. Where do you stand on the Celtics? Like, I know they're favored. I also don't know anyone that necessarily is sure they're going to win. And the only reason for that is I think that for the last couple of months, it doesn't seem like they've been playing good teams.
Right. And they do have this tendency, although not as pronounced as it was last year, to just in mid-game lose interest, take their foot off the gas and be like, well, we're up 15. It'd be more fun if this were close or if we had to come from behind. And they've done that a lot in the last couple of years, but not as much this year and not as much here in the postseason where they're 12-2. And I think part of that is because they've got guys like Jrue Holiday around and Porzingis, if he's back, and it sounds like he will be, who are pros who don't play that game. So do I think they've got it locked up? No, but I'm much more confident about this team than I was about the last couple of years.
Yeah, that is more or less aligned with what I've heard thoughtful Celtics fans saying here, is that, like, I think some of it, it all comes back to, I'm not convinced, or I can't believe, this or that is for real this year where it wasn't. But that's all because of last year. I mean, the Celtics played like the best team in the NBA all year long, and they certainly have done everything that they could have done in the playoffs to this point to continue shoring up that argument. It's just, if you remember the last few postseasons, then, you would know that it's not quite as simple as that. The Mavericks are really interesting to me just because beyond being a five seed can mean a lot of different things. The Western Conference was really good. They were basically the best team or one of the best teams in basketball for the last couple months of the regular season, going back basically almost to the All-Star break. They've continued to be that good. And yet, again, we're talking about the impact of memory on assessing something in the present. It's like they've added better players, better role players. The roster makes a lot more sense. The rotation makes a lot more sense. But a lot of the guys that I'm used to watching on TNT in the late game that I eventually wind up like flipping over and watching a movie or something like that, those guys are all still on the roster. Like Dwight Powell and Josh Green are still there. They still even play sometimes. It's just that they've managed to sort of on the fly, not just find a way for Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving to play together, but at all of the positions, you know, those sort of like role play positions that contemporary NBA teams have, where it's like a tall guy who can catch lobs and dunk them, a guy who can stand in the corner and hit threes. In all of those areas, they've improved. And so they seem, not only are they, you know, at this point, if you've seen them play, they are really good. It's also challenging because of the fact that they're not different enough from the teams that I remember being both hell to watch and like mid plus for basically the entire time that Luka's been there. And so that's the real sort of challenge for me. It's not that like Doncic and Kyrie, we know, are great players. They're playing at a very high level. It's just that everybody around them is a bit better than anyone I'm used to seeing in those roles on these Mavericks teams.
Lots of conversations lately about the WNBA, a lot of it from people who've never seen a game until the last few weeks. And to me, the whole Caitlin Clark situation highlights yet again what's wrong with sports broadcasting, such as it is in this country, particularly when it comes to talk radio or talkie TV.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, and I say this as somebody who is also a decently, you know, Johnny-come-lately type to the WNBA. And I watched women's college championship, you know, the last couple of years. Just I've enjoyed it, and it's like my coworkers are all talking about it. I don't want to be left out. That's honestly what sort of got me into it. And I guess, you know, you got to credit in some ways that Caitlin Clark has had a big enough impact through how brilliant she was in those different tournaments that, you know, she's now at the level where people that would otherwise just be arguing about the NFL and like exclusively the NFL now are making it their business to talk about her. But oh my God, dude, like Pat McAfee and Stephen A. Smith. I mean, beyond that, there's always this like kind of this gutter current of not just sports media, but I think just in general in the discourse where it's people that what they really want to be talking about is some sexist BS or some racist BS. And they're eventually going to find some way to make it about that, you know, and that's true in sports, it's true in politics, it's true in like talking about movies, whatever. That's like a portion of the population that, you know, if you were engaging with them in an office or a social setting, you just wouldn't make eye contact. You'd keep it moving. And those guys are always going to be with us. The thing that's weird is that Stephen A. And Pat McAfee and those guys are getting paid like basically, I mean, Stephen A. gets paid like a Major League Baseball starting pitcher. Like just a really like a mid rotation, mid career free agent.
Right.
Like Sonny Gray money. That's great for him. It is also though a way that like has to be on TV talking about stuff for, you know, it feels like 10 hours a day. And even those of us who have a hard time shutting up, that's a really difficult thing to be able to do. And then, you know, I think once you factor in all of these other, you know, a combination of sexism and wanting to seem like an ally or whatever, you have gotten some of the, not just the worst, but the weirdest, like just inability to be normal for 15 minutes talking about sports that I wouldn't have thought that guys whose only job is talking about sports would have such a difficult time getting through a segment about a rookie struggling to adjust to the league. It's like the third oldest story in the history of sports. And somehow, you know, whatever, they're calling for congressional investigations, you know, candlelight vigils. just hang in there, guys. Wait.
Major League Baseball suspended five players today. One, this poor Padres infielder who was one of the worst gamblers of all time, suspended for life from Major League Baseball. And all of the reports about it will, of course, be brought to you by DraftKings and every other gambling interest that is funneling money into pro sports these days. It's a weird dichotomy.
It's so deranging to see. I mean, it's just, especially because I think this is very much, I think, downstream from the decision to let gambling in the door. That, like, once you invite that particular vampire to cross the threshold, which pro sports did more or less en masse as soon as the Supreme Court made it possible for them to do that, that there's not, even if you were having a good faith conversation about it, the fact that all of this sort of registers as free money to media companies that really need money, to sports owners who simply want money a lot, that it means that everywhere that you are reading about this, regardless, I read Stephanie Apstein's, one of my favorite baseball writers, I read her story on this at Sports Illustrated today. On that page, when you go to Sports Illustrated to read her story about it, there is a betting vertical on the right, the whole thing, the page is powered by FanDuel. It is just inescapable at this point. And I think that it's very short-sighted in the sense that I think that gambling is a pretty bad business, a nasty business. It's a good business to be in if you're okay making money immiserating other people or whatever. But I also just think that having everything be close together like that, that simply like removing the mostly cosmetic wall that existed between gambling and sports in the first place, means that all of this not just feels different and feels a little bit worse, it becomes a little bit more challenging to sort of take anybody seriously on it. You know, take the leagues or take the media or whatever. If you're all taking all of this money, how upset can you really be at poor Tucapito Marcano for losing 97% of his parlay bets or whatever it was?
It's a bizarre thing, and I sound like a dinosaur when I say it, but I'm not a fan of the ubiquity of sports betting these days. And for me, it's personal. I go back to, as we all did in our 20s, I thought I knew things. Now I'm pretty convinced I know nothing. But in my early 20s, I got coerced. Didn't require much arm twisting, but I began betting on some sports and got in a little bit of a hole. And the older guy who was telling me, I'm sure I had to do this, you got to double up. And so I had to make this ridiculous bet on two college basketball games that I knew nothing about to get my money back. Now, this was so long ago, it was pre-ESPN. The only source for scores on a Saturday night in those days was something called 900 Sportsline, which was a 900 number you could call to get scores.
Oh, my God.
And they didn't have the scores. And so now it's midnight, and I'm a little worried. I was working at a radio and TV station at the time, so I got the great idea. I'll go there and check the old Associated Press teletype. And I did, but I couldn't find the scores. And all right, it's got to be there somewhere. And so I emptied out trash cans full of wire copy, and I'm sitting in the newsroom floor in the wee small hours of the morning, and I finally find the Dartmouth-Harvard score, because, you know, everybody's hanging on the edge of that basketball game.
Yeah, I was going to say, that one wasn't that was the talk of the town.
I've got the coffee-stained score, and I'm holding it up, celebrating up to my waist in old wire copy from the trash cans in the newsroom. Wow. And I thought, this needs to stop. I don't think I should do this anymore.
So did it scare you straight?
It did.
I don't want to live like this?
It did. It did. I mean, I would make the occasional, you know, silly low dollar value bet, like betting on the coin toss at the Super Bowl. But never again did I think I knew anything and knew enough to bet hundreds of dollars I didn't have on games I didn't understand.
So I have not had an experience as intense as that. That was like a really, it's like edited for TV version of Bad Lieutenant or something, but that is doesn't sound great. Does not sound like a good time at all.
No.
Making it so you can do it on your phone means that I do, like, for work, we have like a little, you know, head-to-head thing we do on Sundays for, like, you know, during the NFL season and stuff like that. So, you know, bet $2-$5 at a time, something like that. I don't do it every week, but I do. I should, you know, while we're getting on the record here, you got your cool guy story, and mine is that, like, you know, whatever. I periodically try to get great value on Raheem Mostert in a head-to-head thing and my coworkers. But the thing that makes me, I guess, like, sort of feel lucky about all of this is that, I mean, if you can be scared straight, that is a good thing. Like, if gambling is the sort of thing that you're curious about, it is a rush. Like, you can see why it's one of the oldest human pastimes there is. The other thing, though, is that there are people, and I'm very lucky. I think I have a lot of sort of obsessive personality traits. I got bad habits here and there, but I don't have whatever the thing in your brain is that makes it so that you can't stop. But a lot of people do. It is in the DSM. I mean, that is like a recognized addictive disorder up there with, you know, all of the other ones that you're more familiar with wrecking people's lives. And I think that this is maybe, you know, it's not the entirety of the business model for your DraftKings, FanDuel types, but I think it's a big part of it, is that, you know, they don't make their money off you betting on the coin toss for the Super Bowl or me throwing $5 in on, you know, week five NFL head-to-head with my coworkers.
Right.
They make that money on parlays, and they make that money on people they can't stop. And that is a, you know, a reality of the business. I think, you know, everybody sort of knows it. It's not a nice thing to think or to talk about necessarily. But just from a broader social perspective, I mean, I wouldn't want to ban alcohol because people get addicted to it, you know? Like, I think it's possible to have, like, a healthy reaction to that sort of thing. I do think, though, that the idea of simply opening the door to all of this stuff and then saying, you know, as a league, that you value your fans so little that you're just going to inundate them with this. And if it turns out that you're one of those people that has that gland in your brain that won't shut off once you start gambling, then that's your problem. I just think it's disrespectful, you know? And I think that in the way that you see, especially baseball, but I think with a lot of other pro sports leagues, that it's a terribly short-sighted decision. Not to say that, you know, these guys are in the business of turning down money or whatever, but these leagues and these teams are going to exist after the current owners have sold them or are dead and gone. And you have to act in a way, like, just stripping the copper wiring out of your walls is a way to get a little bit of extra money that's available to everyone. The reason that most people don't do it is they plan to continue living in the home where the wiring keeps the lights on, you know? And these guys are not acting like they are.
All right, I have to ask you, it's been almost a week now. Have you adjusted to a world in which finally, at some level, albeit low, there is some accountability for one Donald J. Trump?
It's kind of, I'm glad that we're getting to talk about this. I feel like it kind of came and went because, I mean, for one thing, it felt so weird. And for another, I think that everybody's already sort of moved on to the, well, but is it going to matter? Is he in jail? And I don't know the answer to that. I will say that the vibes in the streets of New York City were extremely good. When I called my parents to see how they felt about it, they were like, my dad was literally hooting in the background. So I think that there is an appetite for people seeing consequences for someone whose whole sales pitch is basically, I am immortal and immune to all charges against me. And if you stand behind me, you will be too. I think that there's, you know, I don't want to guess at the election. I don't like thinking about it more than anybody else. I have to think that it means something that one of the two people in it is so widely disliked that otherwise normal people come out of their houses banging pots and pans anytime something bad happens to them. Like, that has to mean something, in my opinion.
Right.
And it feels like in this case, that is, I don't know. Once you see that happen once, it sort of changes your perspective on, you know, just how much of a 50-50 race anything actually is.
I agree completely on that. And, before I let you go, our friend Alan Adams wanted me to ask you about Ray's mustard. I know you talked about mustard on the latest edition of the podcast. You got to be a Ray's fan now, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
Any problem with it? I have not. So I haven't tried it.
Oh. Good? It's very good. It's Maine's own mustard. It's right down there, and based in Washington County. You got to get on that.
I should look. I should say that for context here. It's. I have seen it. But it's like if you ask me if I like Allen's coffee brandy, I'm going to tell you yes. Not just because I'm not rude, but it's not the sort of thing. My wife. So it's. my wife, who is not a big sandwich person, her dad, who like literally will not cook anything, like will not make himself a sandwich. There's no mustard in the home.
Oh,
so I would have to. And the only sandwiches I really get when I'm in Maine are Amato's. So the idea of like, I haven't been in a mustard forward situation. I should seek it out. I like the idea. Like, I feel like having is it a spicy mustard?
Well, they make several different types. And I know you mentioned, like me, you like the spicy brown mustard. I like that a lot. And they've got a couple that are quite good in that realm.
Yeah. I'll check for it. I mean, I feel like that's the sort of thing where I'm up enough on, and I like the idea of, you know, regional, local sort of brands of things, just because the idea of like just living in a world where it's 100%, you know, PepsiCo or Nestle is, it fills me with dread. And that doesn't mean that I've necessarily found a use for Allen's Coffee Brandy or at this point I haven't spread Raised Mustard on anything. But I feel like if I'm going to live my ideals, I have to seek it out.
I'm going to say that in your efforts to be a part-time Mainer, I would put Raised Mustard way ahead, certainly of Allen's Coffee Brandy and gosh, even Moxie in my accounting.
Yeah, so I've never met anyone that's actually like, yeah, love the coffee brandy, can't get enough of it. It's just the sort of thing that it seems like New Jersey has this too, where it's kind of, I don't know, like a conversation piece. I don't know people that eat a lot of Taylor ham / pork roll, which is the extremely salty local breakfast pork that people have here. But it is, you know, you got to have an opinion on it. You have to know about it one way or the other.
Well, and I think in Maine, if I remember right, Allen's has even been surpassed now by Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey as the drink of choice.
Yeah. Yep. Which, again, is one of those things where that's kind of a national brand,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I remember just walking by my wife grew up on not a rural route, but just a very country street. Her mom used to walk on the side of the road, and we took a walk with her one time, and the sheer volume of empty
yes,
airplane-sized bottles of Fireball that had been thrown out of passing trucks and cars. If they were recyclable, and these are little plastic guys, if they had been recyclable, we could have just like bagged them and just been handed a crisp 20.
Oh, easily. Yeah, they're everywhere. They are the official
remarkable
roadside trash of the state of Maine.
Yep. Which is nice. It's cool that that's an amazing honor for any brand to have achieved dominance in that sector.
And the best part is if you take one of those little nips, it kind of gives you a fresh breath, and you may not need to brush your teeth before going on the radio or a podcast.
Oh, my God. You brought it full circle.
I did.
This is why he's the best in the business. Got to respect it. Hats off, man.
David Roth, Defector and The Distraction. Thank you as always, my friend. We'll check in with you soon.
Right on. Look forward to it. Take care, man.
That's David Roth on Downtown. It's 531.